Good evening, and welcome to tonight's monthly teleconference entitled My Body and MS: Keep Moving Forward. All lines are currently in a listen-only mode. During the presentation, we will conduct several question-and-answer sessions. If you would like to ask a question, press the number one on your touch-tone keypad. Please try to ask questions that are general in nature and that might appeal to the larger group. Once your question is asked, your line will be remuted. Questions will be taken in the order that they are received. I would now like to turn the conference over to Carrie Wilches, Program Director for the Inland Northwest Chapter. Carrie, you may begin.
Good evening. As she said, my name is Carrie Wilches. I'm the Program Director at the Inland Northwest Chapter. We are very glad to have both people from participants from the Inland Northwest Chapter and the Greater Northwest Chapter with us. We're going to start in just a moment with our speaker, but I wanted to remind you there will be the question and answer sessions, and those will be around 6:55 and then again at 7:10 and then at 7:25. The speakers will announce that, so have your questions ready. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Craig Smith, who is a physical therapist with Group Health and speaker for the evening.
Hi, this is Craig. It's really good to have all of you out there.
And I'm on a speakerphone, and I hope that this is really clear for all of you to be able to hear. I want to tell you a little bit about my background first. I've been a physical therapist for 40 years, I guess. And I currently work in Spokane. I was introduced to my first MS patient in Texas right out of graduate school. And for the last 30 years, I've had a person on my staff in two different workspaces who's had MS. So I have had a reasonable amount of intervention with MS, both from a patient standpoint and from coworkers. I am currently on the advisory board for the MS Society and on their board of trustees as well. And I like this work, and they asked me to do a little presentation tonight. So that's what this is, and I'm glad to do it. There are five important areas that I would like to go through tonight with which I deal with my patients with MS as well as others, but I want to really focus on the MS side of thing. The first one is exercise. It is one of the primary areas of emphasis, and it has to be tempered with appropriate rest. I want you to imagine for a moment that the bank that you bank at is also the bank where you bank your energy for the day. You know that you can deposit by resting appropriately and not overdoing, and that you can also withdraw from that by what you do during the day, including shopping, taking care of kids, grandkids, whatever it is that you're doing. The biggest part of this is that you can overdraw. Just like with a bank, there's a penalty for that. And that overdraw that you go through costs you down the road in fatigue, inability to get things done, maybe a little loss of the memory that you had, all of those things. I want you to also imagine for a minute that you draw a line down the middle of a sheet of paper. To the left-hand side of that line is functional. To the right-hand side of that line is non-functional. If you exercise and rest appropriately, you move yourself from the fence that divides those two further and further to the left. And the real intent of being able to move further to the left is to get you as far away from the fence that divides you from non-functional, so that in the event of a flare, you have something to give up without falling over the fence to the side of non-functional. And these basic concepts are concepts that you as an MS patient probably know. Maybe family members around you don't know, don't understand as easily as that. And these are easy ways to convey that information to others. In my experience in dealing with most of my MS patients, the patients get it. My folks see all of these things. They sometimes have a hard time saying no because the expectation was up until the diagnosis was made and the disease process had progressed to some level that that person who had MS was invincible, 10 feet tall, bulletproof, and could do anything. And now all of a sudden, you can't, or you say you can't, and people don't see dripping blood, they don't see bones sticking out, and so they think, well, you know, if you just exercise a little bit more, if you just get up and get going, you'd be okay. And the answer is that's not how this disease process works. And so one of the things that I want to really sort of draw a picture about here is this. Each muscle that you have is made up of a bundle of individual fibers, and each one of those fibers has input from a nerve. In MS, some of those nerve fibers lose their insulation, and so they no longer conduct, just like the losing of an insulation on a cord that goes to your lamp. If you lose the insulation enough and it shorts out, the lamp doesn't work. In MS, a similar thing happens. The nerve no longer conducts to the muscle, and the fibers that were innervated by that nerve no longer get the message. Muscle fibers work, and then they rest, and then they work, and then they rest. So fibers are turning on and turning off all of the time. One of the issues that comes up in MS is when you use the fibers enough and they get fatigued, they turn off to get rest. The problem is that the rest of the fibers that would have turned on to take their place can't. And you have significant amounts of fatigue as a result of that. You simply can't do. And understanding that appropriate rest means that at the end of the day, you've left enough energy in your bank to be able to take care of dinner, the things you do after dinner, and getting ready for bed and getting into it, hopefully not at the end of your energy draw for the day. Now, if you can draw circles, for example, next door to the bank, you have Costco, and maybe you have Walmart, and maybe you have the place where you go get your hair done, or you go get your shoes fixed, or you go get, you buy your clothes, or whatever you do, each one of those represents a possible withdrawal for the day. A big store like Costco, Walmart, for example, are big energy draws. And you only have a certain amount of energy in that bank. So you can choose to take one big energy draw, or you could choose to take a couple, three smaller ones, but you can't do them all. And being able to say no related to what you're going to do for the day, since you, as the person who has MS, is most likely to know how much energy you have that day, you can say, you know, we're going to put off going to Costco till tomorrow because I've got these three other things we need today. So that you divvy up what you're doing so that you can spread out your energy expenses over the week and that your bank always has a little bit left over for you. So learning to exercise in moderation so you know when to stop before you're done because it's another energy withdrawal. Learning what to do and when to stop is a really important concept that I really try to make well known to the patients that I work with. Rest is the other side of activity. You have to learn to say no. You have to learn to say tomorrow instead of today. It is not about, and this is the other major emphasis in all of this, this is not about giving up. It is not about giving in or, quote, learning to live with it. I hate the phrase, because it means somehow that you've given up on doing some of these things. And I really want to make a point that it's about learning to adapt to change so that you have the energy to continue on throughout the day, complete the things that you have to do, and then decide what you want to do. Prioritizing the tasks is still a very important part of this. You have to be able to accomplish all that you want to and put in order a priority so that you can check off an item or two you were successful with and know what you can leave for tomorrow. You need to rest often. We talked a little bit about how the muscles work and the things that you need to be able to do to understand that the muscle is not getting all the information it should from your brain in order to activate itself. And when it doesn't and it runs out of steam, there isn't anything left. It's very much like the person who has to lift the car off of someone. They give an maximum effort to move the car, and they are done because they've exerted everything they have at a maximal level. That's what happens when you exercise at that level. And when you do and you run out of energy, you have none left. So you're just done. And again, being prepared to deal with family and friends who don't necessarily know enough about MS to be able to fully understand what you're trying to tell them, their understanding is going to come from you and from programs like this in helping to clearly identify what it is about saying no, what it is about exercise and moderation, and what it is about doing the things that you need to do in order to be able to accomplish the things that you want to each and every day. So you need to be prepared to share with them some of these ideas and concepts so that it's more clear all the way around as far as their understanding, because then the pressure is not on you to always be the perfect person who can do everything as you have always done in the past. Remember also that as we get towards summer, and especially here in eastern Washington when the heat goes up, cooling vests are still available through the MS Society, and learning to keep yourself cooler so that you do not exhaust yourself just because of the heat is still a really important part of this. Okay, we're going to take a short break right here, and we're going to open up the phone lines for questions. And the operator is going to do all that. So if you have any questions, please just speak right up, and I'll be more than happy to try to get through what we're talking about here, because I got a couple more important points that I want to go through after we open this up for some questions. Okay?
If you would like to ask a question, please press the number 1 key on your touch-tone keypad. Once your question is asked, your line will be remuted. We have 2 people ready to ask questions. Our first question comes from Marcella. Marcella, please go ahead.
Thank you. I really don't have a question. I just wanted to let you know that I appreciate what you're saying. And I have found that if I don't exercise every morning, I run out of energy a lot quicker. And I think it's really important. So thank you for making that point.
Thanks very much for sharing. It's good news because it's really an important part of keeping yourself strong enough to be able to overcome what's going on.
Our next question comes from Nancy. Nancy, please go ahead.
I wonder if the information about learning what to do and when to stop and proper rest applies to secondary progressive as well as to R&R MS.
The general answer is still yes. Primary progressive is harder for everybody to deal with, including me. I've had patients who have primary progressive, and it is much more difficult to be able to understand how much should you do, when should you stop, when should you go, that kind of thing. But the issue still is with the muscle fibers that are working, it's important to make them as strong as you can so that they hold up under what you want to be able to do in terms of, you know, just getting yourself ready for bed or being able to go to the store, being able to go out with friends to go do some fun thing like enjoy a show or go to a sporting event or something. It's still a really important concept to try to make the muscle fibers that are working as strong as they can be So literally your endurance is built up so you can do things longer. It's still tougher with progressive as opposed to remitting. There's no doubt about that. And I don't know that I can be a whole lot more specific about that than what I just did. But I still think understanding where that fence is in the middle that divides the left-hand side of the page from the right-hand side of the page so that you are further away from the line that says non-functional is by continuing to make what you have available to you. But again, exercise in moderation is the name of that game for all of this, just like it is do all things in moderation so you have some pizzazz left at the end. Okay?
Our next question comes from Jessica. Jessica, please go ahead.
Yes, I just wondered if when I go swimming, sometimes I get a tightness feeling around my rib cage. And I'm just wondering if that's a sign that I'm doing too much or maybe too vigorous of exercise, or do you have any words of advice on that?
There are probably a couple different answers. One, I haven't seen you swim, so I don't know how much you do. But certainly the tightness that comes from that can be because you're exercising vigorously. One of the questions I would ask you, and this is rhetorical and you don't have to answer, you could if you like. One of the things that you need to think about is, are you stretching to go along with your exercise? Because if you're not stretching to keep yourself as mobile as possible, as well as being as strong as possible, you're probably losing ground. An adequate stretching program, not only for your arms and your legs, but also for your torso, is really an important concept. And lastly, but certainly not least, is how to maintain really good core strength. That is, what is your abdomen doing in all of this? And one of the things that we see with people who have MS and other neurological degenerative processes is weakness in the trunk. Weakness in the trunk is no different than weakness in your arms or legs or anything else for that matter. It still needs to be worked on just like arms and legs do. So between stretching and some good work on core, you may find that you may do a little bit better. All right?
Our next question comes from William. William, please go ahead.
Hi, I appreciate the conference. I was funny. I was talking to my clinician last night, or not my clinician, but my coordinator, my MS coordinator for this area, and I told her I'd be going into a seminar on Saturday, but I thought I better bank some time, bank some energy, and then you come along and say the very exact thing I kind of made up yesterday, which was great, and I appreciate that. But also, it's kind of confusing for me, you know, now I've just started having fatigue issues that have gotten a lot worse. And I have a trouble differentiating between energy fatigue, like you haven't been eating enough, and muscular fatigue because it makes my whole body tired. It doesn't have anything to do with nutrition, does it? I mean, really.
In a general kind of way, the answer is they're very different. The energy fatigue that you get from not having enough carbs or enough energy, you know, from the foods you eat sort of gives you that headachey feeling, a little bit of, you know, it comes on gradually. The fatigue you're probably experiencing related to MS is sort of that all over, holy cow, I really can't go. Normally, as your blood sugar diminishes, you just don't feel like you have the pizzazz, you don't have that, you can't move quite as quickly. It's like working out in the yard really hard and you haven't eaten since breakfast and it's now past lunchtime. You just sort of slow down. You might get a little bit of a headache out of that. The whole fatigue issue is that nothing works. You are just so tired at its extreme, obviously, but you just don't have the energy to get up and go. I think if you're doing a good job managing your nutrition, that what you may be more likely to be experiencing, William, is a whole lot more related to the fatigue related to the MS. So if your nutrition is well balanced, you're still doing the things you need to do to manage your nutrition really well, then the rest of that is probably the fatigue issue. And that's where you need to be able to, you know, bank the energy just like you described. Excuse me. Bank the energy like you described, as well as being able to say no to things that you know are going to overdraw your bank.
We have no further questions in queue at this time.
Okay. I think what we'll do at this point is I'm going to move on to a couple of other areas that I would really like to bring up, and then we'll open it up again for questions towards the end. But the next thing that I really want to talk to you about is adaptive equipment. I want to tell you a quick story. My father had a degenerative neuromuscular disease. It was not MS, but it was progressive. And it slowly took away the strength in his legs. And I'm a storyteller, so bear with me while I relate this, because some of you may relate at some point as well. He refused a cane, and I knew that he was getting less stable on his feet. And I had gone with my family to Denver, where my oldest son was getting married, and my dad had flown up from Alabama to be in Denver. And he was standing on a walkway at this outdoor place where we were going to have this wedding, and he was going to step over a very low, probably no more than 4 or 5 inch high rock wall to get to the other side of it instead of following the sidewalk around. And as he stepped over it, he fell over straight backwards, and I was standing one step too far away to stop him from falling. And he fell right backwards onto his backside. And he was in his 70s at the time. And fortunately, he didn't break anything, but he bruised his ego pretty significantly. That evening, after the wedding had all taken place, my brother and I and my father went out to dinner, and we were at Applebee's, and where the bar is, there's a rug on the floor, and there's a tile floor next to it. He was reaching from where we were standing, where the rug and the tile separated, and he was reaching for the back of the bar chair, so that we could sit down since there were no other seats available, and he saw the barrier between, you know, just the line that separated the tile from the rug, and he saw it as an obstacle, and he lost his balance. And again, he fell over backwards. And so twice in one day, he ended up on his backside. Fortunately, the second time, he did no more damage to himself, but he did bruise his ego the second time around, and guess what? He got a cane. And so I asked him the next time I saw him and we were together, I said, Dad, what is it about the cane that's a problem? And he says, I feel like I'm giving up or giving in. And I said, I want you to understand something. And I looked at him and I said, why do you wear glasses? And he said, because I can't read the paper if I don't. And I said, so it's a tool that you use to make your ability to do things easier, because otherwise you'd squint or your arms aren't long enough to reach the paper out or you can't get it close enough or whatever the case may be. And so he was getting the point. And I said, so, Dad, why do you have the hearing aid that you have? And he said, so I can hear you yipping at me. And I said, yeah, pretty much. I said, but you understand that what you're using are adaptations to make you able to do the things you want to do. I said, this is not about giving up or giving in. This is really, truly about using the tools that are available that make you able to do things you might not otherwise be able to do. And he went, okay. And he sort of grudgingly got to that spot. However, as his neurological disease progressed, his neuropathy got worse. He eventually went from the cane to a walker. And the transition for him was much easier because he understood that he could still get around that way. And at some point along the way, we had gone to visit him because now he had moved to Washington, D.C. And he wanted to go to the Smithsonian. And I said, we're going to take you in a wheelchair. And it was like, oh, no, we're not doing that. We're going to drive my car. And I said, Dad, you can't park at the Smithsonian. We're going to take you on the subway, the metro there, and we're going to take you in a wheelchair. And what I wanted him to understand was that by taking the metro and not driving in traffic and not parking and not having to walk all of the way from where we would have had to park to where he wanted to go to see the Hope Diamond, among other things, was that it was about energy conservation. We did this trip. We took him on the metro. We got him the Smithsonian. I pushed him across the mall. We saw the Hope Diamond. He got to see a whole bunch of stuff he would not otherwise have been able to see because he would have had no energy to do it. Got back home to his apartment that night, and he turned around to me and he said, "Well, that went okay." And again, this is sort of his grudging way of saying that he understood that adaptive equipment allowed us to be able to do the things he wanted to do. So the next time I was back there, he wanted to go to the Washington National Zoo. And I said, "We're going to take the wheelchair and we're going to go on the metro again." And he went, "Yep, worked really well." And I went, "Yep, it does." So when we talk about adaptive equipment, I want my patients, and I'd like you to think about this in the same way. You think about this in the way that adaptive equipment allows you, one, let's just say it prevents you from falling. Fall risks are very high. As you lose balance, as you lose sensation, as you lose strength, fall risks increase immeasurably. Falling is one of your worst enemies. Breaking stuff, whether it's your hip or your wrist or your head, is a major issue for many people with neurological dysfunction. And what I really want to point out is adaptive equipment mitigates that. It lessens the chances of your falling. It is also, and I really want to emphasize this word, it is a piece of energy conservation. It's how you bank energy. Well, I don't want to use the power chair in the store because I still want to walk around. But if you use the power chair in the store, then you have time and energy to go see your kid play baseball or to go with a neighbor down the street to go watch, you know, the show or whatever it is. It's a way to spread yourself farther by saving energy you would otherwise have expended on things you didn't need to spend it on. And that's the difference. If you didn't need to spend it on that, you could have spent it on something you wanted to do. And it isn't about not walking anymore. I'm not saying that. You still will walk. You're around your house. You may still walk in the smaller stores. All of that. What I'm saying is if it's a big energy expenditure and you don't have to and you have other things you want to do, adaptive equipment is how you get there from here. So I want to be clear that the use of adaptive equipment is a piece of energy conservation. So one of the things that I want to point out when we talk about adaptive equipment is that it's really important to understand who the vendors are. Some of the vendors are out there, and they will gladly take your money, but not necessarily provide you with the very best in service or quality in terms of the products that you buy or rent. And I want to make sure that when we talk about the different kinds of canes or crutches or walkers or wheelchairs or whatever, that you really know that the vendor you select knows what they're doing. Even in Spokane, where I am, we have folks who really know their way around, and I'm not going to give names because that's not what we're doing tonight, but there are some who just don't. And I want to be clear that when I help my patients work with adaptive equipment, I want to make sure they're getting the best bang for the buck, that they get quality products that are going to last and have some kind of a warranty attached to them, and that the vendor knows what all the adaptions are that can be added to things like wheelchairs to make what you need work for you, not only today, but tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. Make sure that they're experienced and knowledgeable. They really need to know the current rules around Medicare and Medicaid, and they need to know the insurance companies that they're dealing with as well. And if they can't explain all of that to you, you probably ought to be looking for somebody else. So when we get to that, it was one of the reasons why when I was talking to my father about adaptive equipment like canes, and we went to the walker and eventually ended up with a wheelchair. My dad was an engineer, and it was all black and it was all white, and there was never this much gray in the middle at all. But he learned to adapt. My dad ran track when he was in high school and a little bit in college, and he didn't do much exercise except take care of the yards and do Boy Scouts with my brother and me. And he didn't do a lot of physical exercise. When he got his neuropathy going, he actively made a choice to make himself available to start to exercise. And when he was finally convinced that adaptive equipment would make his day go better, he learned to adapt. If he as an engineer could adapt, so can you. So the last piece I want to kind of go over again is this little bit about energy conservation. It's kind of a trite phrase, and I want to make sure that it's clearly understood. It means that you save your energy so you have enough left over at the end of the day, so you have a good end to your day. And again, as we talked about before, prioritize the task. You get several small ones or one big one, but you don't get them all. And it's about changing and adapting to that. Okay. Last but not least, we want to talk about resources before our time comes to an end. You need to know the resources that are available in your own communities that will allow you to maximize your life experience, and that includes the vendors that we already talked about. And I'm going to relate one more quick story here, and it's about a vendor that I was not thrilled about. But the patient had selected the vendor, and so I met with the vendor, and we were talking about a wheelchair for the patient. Before they got to me, the vendor had already selected what it was that the patient was supposed to get. And when I started asking in front of the vendor to the patient specifics about how they ran their life and what they needed, the chair they needed was absolutely different than what the vendor had already selected and was ready to send in to be purchased. And if you know anything about the current system, you know that whether you're a state of Washington covered by Medicaid or if you're under the federal Medicare guidelines, you know that you can't just get another chair because you didn't like the one you got. And there is no longer a, quote, five-year rule. You have to have a change in medical status. And if you buy the wrong chair, you're stuck. So it's really important that you understand who the vendors are and that they know. The vendor was asking me, so what would you like on the chair? And it's like, no, you're the guy who's supposed to be telling me, here are the options for things like swing away footrests. What angle do you want them? Do you want heel loops or do you not? You need to know what else is out there. There are enough different walkers out there these days that you need to know what works for you. Big wheels, little wheels, front wheels only, front and back wheels, all of that kind of stuff is really important to understand. So, in that same vein, the internet and television advertising are not the best places to get this information. Remember that internet and advertising on television are advertising. They are out there to hook you on something that may sound great, but in the long run may not be your best bang for the buck. And so going to authorized vendors where you really understand what it is you're getting, as opposed to just, yeah, look good on the ad on TV, is not the best way to do that. If you have questions about that, the local occupational or physical therapist may also be a really good resource for you. If you've not made their acquaintance, you probably should, because they can be a really effective person to help you work with the vendors. So it's really important to have the experience of people around you, not only that are selling you things, but people who've had some experience in dealing with MS. You need to know what clinics work well with people who've got MS. You need to know what MDs do well with MS. Not everybody who's out there who has MD after their name has had great experience in dealing with people who have MS. Finding somebody who does can be really helpful to you. Their knowledge of the current battery of drugs that are out there to help mitigate the effects of MS is really important. And many of the family practice docs, that's not their forte. So make sure that you understand what your local MS resources are as well. Please be sure that you share, if you know other people or if you go to clinics, be sure you share your resource knowledge. Reinventing the wheel for everybody who comes along is not real economical. And sometimes you, as that resource, can really help somebody else who's just learning how to deal with this problem. So we're going to summarize this. We're going to open it up for some questions here in a minute. All of the things that we've already talked about represent critical aspects of long-term care and the management of MS. Family members absolutely need to be involved. You as an MS patient need to adapt, rest, and exercise routinely and know the resources. I'm going to talk a little bit about exercise. Any of the routine kinds of exercise, whether you're lifting weights, using TheraBand, going to the gym, using a pool, are all fine and dandy. One of the things you need to be sure that you do is balance muscle groups. You know that the biceps, if you know about your body at all, bends your elbow. The muscle on the back of your arm straightens your elbow. Please be sure that when you think about balancing the muscles, that you do a good job on both sides of all of those joints. If you have questions about that or that all sounds great to you, make sure that you go talk to a therapist about how to make sure that you really do a good job of balancing things. As muscle tone gets in the way of some of the people with MS, I have watched people go to the gym and strengthen all the things that work well and never work on the things that don't. And part of the problem is you're losing those muscles that are not working so well, and if you exercise them, you can keep them from losing as quickly. So balancing the muscle groups from the front to the back and as well as the sides, the inside of your lower leg as well as the outside of your leg are just as important as the front and the back. It's what keeps you on your feet is to balance the muscles around your hips and legs, just like it is to balance the muscles around your shoulder, front, back, and sides. So it's really important to understand to do those and do them on a regular basis. One of the callers earlier was talking about the fact that she didn't have all the energy that she might have had if she didn't exercise routinely. And I want to congratulate her for that because I think it's great that she understands that concept. I hope that everybody else will understand that as well. And if you're sort of new to this, that's where resources come in. Who's somebody that can help you understand what it is that needs to be really done? And there's a ton of different exercise routines out there, and I'm not a big proponent of any one in particular. My biggest emphasis is on balance, and those are the things from front to back, side to side. And the last thing we want to really talk about, and I brought it up a little bit ago, and that's about stretching for the person that we talked about also on the phone. And stretching is just as important. It means you need to stretch those same muscle groups, not just hamstrings or not just heel cords or not just putting your arm over your head, but balancing the muscles on the front as well as the back to maintain your range of motion as best as you can. It's significantly important to not lose that range of motion because as you lose it, you become more precarious, and that's part of the problem my father ended up facing. He ended up with bilateral plastic ankle braces, which is what he needed, as well as the cane and eventually the walker. It helped to support him really well. He continued to do the stretching with the people that he was working with, and it worked really well for him. So exercise includes stretching. It's not all about strengthening, and it includes stretching. So that's the piece I wanted to go through here sort of at the end. And now what I think we're going to do is we're going to go through some more questions, so we'll open it up for that.
If you would like to ask a question, please press the number 1 key on your touch-tone keypad. Once your question is asked, your line will be remuted. One moment while questions come into queue. We have one person ready for questions. Our first question comes from Paula. Paula, please go ahead.
Yes. I appreciate this conference. I really am enjoying it. And I wondered, is it very normal for people to always have a very bad time in the afternoon? It seems like every afternoon, no matter what I do, you know, some days I do a lot of things, and in the afternoon I get so draggy, I just can't hardly go. And then usually in the evening I perk up a little bit. Is that normal?
I think the easiest way to answer your question is the later in the day it goes, it typically tends to wind down a bit. We recently did a conference here in Spokane, and there were two main speaker groups and a dinner involved in all of that. And it was pretty obvious that many of the people who were in the audience were struggling by the end of that evening because it was just very long. And I think you are not unusual in any way to expect that at the end of the day you're going to start winding down. Most of my patients who have MS will ask to come in later morning so they can get up and get going, stretch, do their exercises, maybe do a little shopping or whatever they're going to do, come in right before or right after lunch because they really don't want to be here at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I think that's a very common thing. Your energy bank is being depleted. It may be that at the end of the day when your bank has run down and you've sat down, maybe had a little bit of dinner, rested a little bit, that may be why you perk back up again, Paula. But my guess is that overall, I think if you could see the heads of the other people who are listening tonight, you would probably see, yeah, they're shaking their heads going, yep, you tend to wind down toward the end of the day and it's pretty normal. Okay?
Our next question comes from Angela. Angela, please go ahead.
My question is regarding stretching. I know a lot of things you read about exercise or other education programs for, I guess you'd say the normal person, would say you need to warm up your muscles first before you stretch. And I'm wondering how that would apply to as we're trying to conserve our energy, you know, and do what's most important for ourselves.
Okay. As a general statement, it is more important to warm up before you stretch than it is to do it after. More people are hurt stretching cold than are hurt stretching after they warm up. Warm up can be very simple. It can be ride a stationary bike for a few minutes, and it has arms that also move. You do it for 3 or 4 minutes just to kind of get the blood going. So it's not like it's hard. Doesn't need to be much more than walk around the house a couple of times, maybe down the block and back. It could be something as simple as that. All you want to do is sort of warm things up a little bit. You don't have to spend a lot of time doing the warm-up because, as you well pointed out, understanding that you only have a finite amount of energy to use on any given day, there's only so much you have. So make the warm-ups short. Do stand and do arm circles. Walk in place. Do those kinds of things. And then go do your stretches for your heel cords and your hamstrings and your quadriceps and get your arms up over your head and up behind your back, all of those kinds of things. They don't take very long. They don't take huge amounts of energy. Stretching really is pretty passive. So it's not going to suck up a lot of your energy bank. So don't spend a whole lot of it warming up to do that either. Okay?
Our next question comes from William. William, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to mention that I do this very same thing that Paul is talking about. If I get a nap about halfway through my day, I feel like I can go again for an hour or so, and it really makes a big difference with me. So, she's not imagining things or anything. But also, I'm having a heck of a time, I hope some other people are too, but with trying to decide how much is too much. Like one day last week, Monday, I walked a quarter of a mile, which is pretty good. Well, it felt so good Wednesday, I walked half a mile. That night, my legs gave out on me. They turned to jelly. And I always wonder if it's my musculoskeletal problem in my lower back or if it's the MS, and I never can tell. But I need to learn, figure out some way to gauge myself to say, well, that was enough. Better not do any more, you know. When it feels good, it feels good, you know. And it seems like I've always been a very active person until now, but I've got to figure out some kind of a gauge, and maybe somebody, you or somebody, could tell me what to do about that.
I'll give you my best shot at this. Typically, now, understand for a minute, I'm taking what you said. You went from a quarter mile to a half a mile. You doubled your output. Because you felt good with a quarter mile doesn't mean a half mile, which is a doubling of your exercise routine, would have been necessarily the right thing to do. What I would have been more inclined to do, in spite of the fact that you felt great, it could have been a fluke. And you don't know if it's a fluke until you do it more than once. I typically will tell people, you find a level of exercise that works for you. Don't just do it once and then add more. Do it today and then two more times. Now, that could be today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, you know, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or it could be Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I typically will have people do an exercise routine that looks like this today and something different tomorrow. So you might do an arm exercise routine today and legs tomorrow. But you're going to repeat it a minimum of three times, that is Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, for example, to make sure that today wasn't a fluke. And so when you're trying to decide whether or not what you're doing is the right thing, whether it's neuromuscular related to your back or whether it's the rest of the neuromuscular problems related to or neurological problems related to MS, my suggestion would have been start and do the same thing more than once, because you may find that on the second or third day, a quarter mile was just too much. I wouldn't recommend that you do it as you had just started to try successive days in a row. I would have suggested Monday, Wednesday, Friday with a rest in between to be sure that, yes, by Friday I can still do this. I'm doing great. The next thing is I don't double my distance. When I tell people to start out and they go, we'll just take a quarter mile because that's what you had asked about, William. When you talk about, okay, so what should I do? What I really like to do is have people look at their watches or a clock. When I start, how long did it take you to do a quarter mile? So you look and you go, okay, it took you, let's say, we'll just pick a time. We'll just say it took you 10 minutes. So you went out, you went back in 10 minutes. You find out that a quarter mile is a really good distance to walk. You keep walking a quarter mile, and what you find out is, over time, your speed gets faster. It's telling you your endurance is building up. And so when you've reduced the speed a little bit, that is, it takes you less time, now think about walking a little farther, but not doubling. So you go a quarter mile plus a couple hundred more yards, and you turn around and you go back, and you see again, what is my time looking like? Because if you're really dragging and it's going very slowly, don't add distance. Work to increase your endurance so that your time is going down. A quarter mile may be your upper limit. You don't know yet because you've not seen what it looked like more than once in a row. Does that help?
Thank all everybody that listened in, too.
We have no further questions in queue at this time.
Okay. I want to thank everybody for being here. I hope that this was helpful. Make sure that you talk to your local OT or PT if you need further information, and especially make yourself available for the resources available from your local MS folks. Again, thanks very much for being here tonight. It's been a great pleasure of mine to be able to speak to you. And y'all take care, okay? Bye-bye.